This is Rachadix After Hours.
And tonight, another episode of your favourite Rack Addicts After Hours. Over to the team. Oh hey, it's me, handing to myself, the team. It's episode 198 of your favourite music and technology podcast. My name is Ben, Pete is here, and we've got some catching up to do. Pete, what have you been doing that you haven't been telling me about?
Having COVID.
Oh, well that's fun, isn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was horrible.
Rubbish.
Hence the episode that was published a few days ago was the episode from a week or so before.
Indeed. Time is meaningless.
Yes, I was too unwell to finish the edit.
Thank you for soldiering through.
I know. Anyway, it's all done now, so that's behind me and we're back on track.
Just got to make sure we can still speak English.
Yes.
I think we're doing all right.
But the Osmo has arrived and then left again. It went to a customer. Customers come first.
Have you parked your order or cancelled it?
I haven't done anything.
Right.
I got informed while I was unwell and not at the store that the Osmo was ready for collection. And then when I got to the store, I was informed that they'd given it to someone else.
Lovely.
I'm not that phased, actually.
Yeah.
We've got one on display now.
Uh-huh. A permanent one? Nice.
And I don't know. And I have been reading some of these.
Have you had a proper go, though? I know you're worried about the potential quality control issues.
Well, I've also heard there's all sorts of calibration issues happening. So I'm a bit concerned. I might hold off until they've ironed out all the creases, which you'd have hoped they've done by now, but, you know. And the unit we've got, or the fully production units, weren't quite the same as the one that we had.
Oh, that is that one that did a little round of the stores?
Yes, it was a pre-production version, so somewhat different. A bit cheap, I would say, in parts. A bit, it's okay. I mean, they're, you know, for what it is, it's not too bad, but yeah, I'm wavering. I'm wavering.
If you cancel that order, just think how long it might be again.
No, they're actually coming through on a monthly basis now.
Oh, really?
I believe.
Not too bad then.
I would expect mine to be available for the end of December if I maintain the order.
We shall see.
I might sit back and just wait for someone to part exchange one in buy it cheaply.
Watch this space, as they say.
Yes, we'll have to see.
Do you say you had a Super Gemini on the wall?
Not yet.
Or did it just swing through and you had a look?
Apparently there was one floating around, but it was doing the same trick as the UDO Super 6 that we first encountered when they first turned up.
Is that the one that was really broken?
Yes.
I remember that. Sorry, George.
And apparently this one, they couldn't get any noise out of it either, and they did everything they give it. They gave it a firmware update and it just didn't want to play ball.
Yeah, I remember doing that last time. The distributors had said, oh, there's this artist in town. He wants to have a go. And they'd sort of emailed me a firmware update to try and get it to work. And it was bad. Mm. Of course, they're brilliant now.
Yeah, once they work, they're fine. But they were definitely a bit
spicy.
Yes, initially. But so we'll have to see. I do want to have a go, though.
Yeah, the Sonic State with George and Nick was pretty cool. It was clear that George is really inspired by the box that he's made. It was quite a good bunch of sounds.
No, it's definitely a synth made with love. 100%. Better than some of the other things that are surfacing from various manufacturers.
Various or just one?
No, I'm going to say various.
Honest. You've got one of those little doobries that you told me about, and what? We haven't heard it yet.
I know.
Is it in the building?
It is in the building.
You've got to spool it up one day.
It's been switched on once.
Amazing. One whole time.
I was almost thinking about returning it.
Oh, dear.
Well, no, it's perfectly fine, but I just thought, why have I done this? Why have I bought this thing?
Because, Pete, it would be rude not to.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Which one was it again? I've forgotten.
It was the JT4000, the tiny, tiny little one.
Yeah.
I don't know how many voice, four voice digital
like polyphony. Paraphonic or something?
No, it's polyphonic.
Oh, really? Wow.
But it's got the white clean keyboard and so forth. Yeah, I most probably need to crack it open and get it. It's actually gone back in its box.
Right.
I think I sat in bed with it for about 5 minutes going, why have I bought this?
Fair enough.
But yeah, I suppose I need to give it justice. To be really honest, with everything that's been going on, I have had very little opportunity to get near any musical equipment for my own pleasure, which is somewhat unfortunate.
That's a shame indeed.
Yeah, I'm going to try and remedy that situation over the next few weeks, trying to divest myself from all the various responsibilities and nags and things in life that have been distracting me from my enjoyment of music production.
A worthy cause.
Definitely. But basically, that was it. Me, Mr. Sickie.
Rubbish.
Yeah.
Not to rub it in, but I've been fine.
Thank you for that one.
Yep, couldn't resist. Actually, weirdly, a busy couple of weeks. It doesn't happen very often, but things have happened and I've done stuff. Magical. My third, I think, sound design job, paid work. Hooray! That was quite cool. A little bit of, what's the phrase? A little sprinkle on top for a climate-themed event opening video that my ex-colleagues were making. I was very, very glad to get their call for the job on that one. While we're in the audio world, today, actually, this is hot off the press. I actually don't know how old this thing is, but it's new to me today. Adobe's podcast tool. It's a beta thing, which I think if you've got an Adobe account that you're paying for, you get a certain number of minutes a month, and it's just a kind of remove noise and echo type thing, and it also processes a bit. But it's shockingly good. So, this was at work. So, I think my boss had recorded a bit of voiceover for some project we were sending out as a bit of a draft. And my colleague had said, oh, Ben, can you just repair this? And I went, oh, yeah, I was really busy. So, I just chucked it through my usual chain on Isotope, stupidly without listening to it, because, yes. And I also didn't spot anything on the spectrogram either, which was, I was busy. That's my excuse. So, turns out it was awful. It was reverb-y. And I think he recorded it through a headset microphone, so it was, I think it had nothing above 7 kilohertz or something. So it's exactly how you imagine a terrible headset microphone to sound in an echoey room.
Yes.
And my colleague showed me what the Adobe podcast tool had done to it, and it was shockingly good. I wish I could play such a thing for you, but audio files from work that I didn't bring away. I don't think it is possible to produce the improvement that the Adobe tool did with audio repair software like Isotope RX.
Okay, sounds like it's quite special.
So of course it's one of these things, ooh, powered by AI, it's incredible. I couldn't tell whether it was doing some kind of speech resynthesis type stuff, or using some kind of, you know, trained model to introduce audio that wasn't there originally. Yeah, shocking. Absolutely night and day. Yeah, absolutely no reverb. It sounded like it had been recorded in a pro dead studio with a good sound engineer on the other end. It was amazing.
I see. Is it a cloud-based service?
It is indeed, as all of these things are these days.
I wonder if that's because they need the processing power, which is at the centralized end.
Most probably indeed. What I did do, because I wanted to see if I could fool it, and I wanted to feel good about my job that I can do some things that AI can't. We had a project which was recordings of VoIP calls, so you know, you'll have those usual weird internet artifacts that you'd pick up on a Zoom call sometimes, but in this particular case it was that kind of over-aggressive built-in noise suppression gate type situation that lots of laptops do that kind of ruins everything, especially if you're in an echoey room, and it couldn't fix that.
Okay.
It made it a lot worse, in fact. It did sound creepily unnatural and confirmed my suspicions about the sort of voice synthesis aspect of it. But it's really interesting. What I might do is record some audio, ruin it to the point of how the example from work was ruined, and then sort of play it back on the next podcast, because it's really impressive.
It would be very interesting to see how well it processes anything recorded in your very lively apartment.
Yeah, I could do a few ones. Just record in the middle of the living room kitchen with nothing else going on, then also rip out all the low end, a bunch of the top end, so it sounds like a headset. I can do that as well. Maybe I'll do that. That'd be quite fun. See if I remember. I'll bring it in. Show and tell next week.
Is there any hint to how much they're going to be charging for this service once they go away from the beta?
I don't know. I can't remember how many minutes it is, but everybody just has access to it if you're, you know, paying for Adobe subscriptions, but I'm not sure if it will be a separately billable thing or if it's just going to be a feature of a Creative Cloud subscription.
No, they really do like you to buy the whole package, don't they?
That they do.
Yes, I don't anymore.
Yeah, it's annoying. I was having a good rant about this with my colleagues the other day, that still After Effects, unfortunately, it doesn't have the monopoly on motion design, but kind of the 2D quick motion graphics stuff that we do, there really are no better solutions. Compositors, oodles. And if you get into the higher end, more advanced, high budget stuff, loads of options. But mid-range, unfortunately, you have to be a slave to Adobe. So I would love to be proven wrong, by the way.
Okay, so that sounds an interesting exercise. I can't imagine that the other producers of sound audio processing technologies won't be doing similar things very shortly. So the next incarnation of iZotope.
Yeah, it could well do it. I know they have it definitely in their marketing materials on things like, what's the mastering one? Is that, that's, it's not Neutron, no, that's a vocal effect thing. Do you know iZotope's mastering suite?
Well, I'm familiar with the whole suite, but I don't know the individual components of it.
Ozone, that's the one. I'm pretty sure I've seen AI plastered all over the Ozone stuff. To what extent it might actually be cloud connected server farm stuff.
Trouble with the phrase or the AI moniker is that I'm sure lots of marketing people are just slapping it over everything.
Yes, because most of the time it's machine learning, which is a different thing but similar.
Yes,
I don't know.
Not as advanced as these large language models.
No, because I think when now in the current state of it all, when somebody says AI, we think ChatGPT and the image ones that have DALL-E, you know, all of those.
Yes.
When that's not what's going on.
No, I mean, again, I think it's a bit like when the iMac came out and then everything had an eye in front of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Was that literally just Apple doing that? And then everybody...
Yeah, Apple...
Is that the beginning of everybody copying Apple?
Yes.
Amazing. Speaking of motion design, because I went in that direction, I did a thing... Okay, this doesn't sound that exciting, but... It's a very big moment for me because I was there at work, working very hard, being productive and meeting my deadlines. And
I see.
I had an idea.
Okay.
I wrote it down. I thought it was a cool idea. And I then ended up making the thing. It isn't finished because I want to do sound design for the thing. But I'm very excited that I had a creative idea, did the creative thing, made a doodad, and it's kind of interesting. Let me show you that thing. Unfortunately, this is a video with no sound, so the podcast is not going to be able to experience, but I'm going to show Pete anyway.
I see. I'm a good 10 feet away?
A long way off.
So I'm not quite sure what it represents.
So my thought was, I think I'd been playing a bit of Fallout New Vegas recently, so I was thinking of things like the intro to Alien.
Say that.
Oh, yes, I've succeeded. So it's, you know, in kind of sci-fi things that are in the future, but it's probably old, so they thought, ooh, these monochrome displays with giant pixels are really futuristic looking. So I thought, what about a boot sequence looking thing for a synthesizer on one of those screens? So this is... Well, part of the problem is let's try and make something that looks like it's on an old CRT. That's kind of fun. And then also trying to make up some jargon that looks vaguely like a computer running some code or something. And then because it's a synth I know well, I thought, okay, it's going to be Arturia Matrix Boot themed. So I called it the Matrix Boot. Amazing.
So
anyway,
were they waveforms I could see?
You could see the little waveforms scrolling across. So I used the power of AI. I went on the old ChatGPT to get it to write me some fake code for just because I couldn't be bothered to try and make it all up. So it goes, can I pause stuff on Instagram? Yeah, I can. So it's sort of /Arturia_matrixbrute.startup_sequence.bin. And then, you know, that little thing where it looks kind of like a little spinning line, but it's actually /\_ and it just keeps repeating.
Yeah, and it just looks like it's rotating.
Yeah. So I made one of those, which I thought was quite fun. And then, like, I've got scan lines.
Yeah, I was saying you had the refresh. Yeah. The constant refresh was quite good.
Yeah, I posted some work in progresses on the ModCaf Discord. And Chris actually pointed out, because in the start, I have kind of big Arturia logo that then kind of just... moves over to the top right. He mentioned, and yeah, I wouldn't know how to do this, but on older computers it would have had to like redraw it each time, so it would have been like in sort of line kind of bits.
It would have broken up as it kind of traversed to the corner of the screen.
Exactly, which I'm sure with more time I could have figured out how to make that look, but I couldn't be bothered. But yeah, I'm pleased. It sort of builds up the panel of the Matrix Brute along the bottom, because in the manual they have these nice kind of wireframe looking things, so I sort of stole bits of those and kind of glued it all together to have that kind of building up at the bottom. But I'm pleased with it. I like it. It's cool. I'm happy I made a thing. So that's fun. If you want to see the Matrix boot animation, you can follow me on Instagram at galactic_bathtub. Finally, I haven't done it yet, but the week going forwards is quite exciting because I'm going to see my first immersive interactive visuals art installation thing at the weekend with Ant in London.
Okay.
It should be cool. It is, but it may well be Notch related, which is quite exciting.
Hence why you're going with Anthony.
Indeed. It's free anyway, but he told me about it, so I thought, ooh, yes, do it. It's called Shifting Landscapes, featuring the work of Adam Lofton, Emmanuel Vaughan Lee, bunch of Instagram accounts, one of which is Marshmallow Laser Feast. Shifting Landscapes is jam-packed with beautiful yet haunting imagery that raises awareness of the crisis that is affecting communities all over the world. I'll be back with a report on that next week.
Interesting.
Mm.
Anyway, we've got a correction to make. I'll let you make the correction.
Oh, was it my fault? Did I get it wrong?
No.
No?
No, it wasn't, but I was kind of right. So last week we said the Behringer UBXA was a certain price and you looked it up. Look it up now.
Uh-oh. www.yourfriendlylocalmusicshop.whatever. See, I tried to type while talking and I just went to a bunch of parked websites. They didn't go very well. UBXA, what did we say last week?
I think we were saying £1,500.
Yours for only 999 Great British pounds.
Yeah, it's actually landed at the proper price.
Yeah.
The pricing was all screwed up because it was all embargoed and it changed right on the dot when the embargo lifted.
Amazing. Well, that changes things. Have they arrived yet? No, they haven't. Pre-order.
We've had a bunch of them.
Maybe they've all been and gone.
I think, or do we have a bunch of them? I can't remember.
Well, 16 voices for a grand. What is the Rev 2 these days? Because it used to be about 1,600 for the 16 voice, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
Ooh, 2,249 these days.
Yes. Because last week we were saying, you know, if it's that price, just get an Hobie 6.
Yeah, but now you'd have to, you know, stick an extra grand and something on top of that.
Yes, definitely.
Wow. Now, that does make it more interesting.
Assuming it works okay and sounds okay.
Yes. I think it does sound okay. The only complaints I've seen have been from the stereo voice allocation thing. I'm not sure if you can turn it off or not. I'm not sure if it has like a width control. Because by default, in all the demos, it's one note is panned hard one direction, the next note the other way. Which I think is cool, but might not be for everyone.
Well, we've certainly had plenty of pre-orders. It's going to be very popular, but I won't be getting one.
You're all right with your deep minds. How many at the moment?
Just two in this room.
What about in this house, Pete?
No, it's just two at the moment. Okay. I was just about to order a desktop version, and I've kind of... You know when you go through that kind of phase of...
What am I thinking?
What am I thinking? Sort of disinterested. Why have I spent all this money
all
on
the time.
All this equipment?
Well, not anymore, but... I've been there.
Yeah, I kind of slipped into that phase. I think after all the initial intensity and excitement of doing the test chamber project.
Yes.
Once that waned and it was behind us, I kind of...
Cooled off on that.
Gone off the boil on all of it.
Yeah.
For now.
We do have an audience request. Jez wants us to deal with that one big teenage engineering thing, which is, of course, the grip car.
Okay.
Have you seen the grip car?
No.
So... this one was announced and then there was a lot of sort of, you know, teasing and hype for this one. And then sort of everybody got confused by it. And then with no fanfare at all, the other thing turned up. But first, the grip car is sort of, it's much more on their design focused thing. It is an aluminium car that you can push along your desk and it steers.
Ooh.
Ooh, and it's got nice bearings in it.
Because essentially, Teenage Engineering are a design company, not a synth company.
Yeah, they just happen to make instruments, but they are a design company indeed. I want to see if there's a video of this.
I know there was a lot of excitement from my colleagues on the product that we already mentioned a week or so ago when we spoke about it. And one of my colleagues even went out and bought one full price because he was so excited about getting
it. Oh my, that is keen.
Yes, quite a few of my other colleagues are anticipating buying one as well.
But more importantly, the grip car. I can't find any videos of it, but here it is. Yours for only £250.
What?
It's a desk toy, basically.
But it's a set of wheels that are articulated that's it.
Yep.
And you grip it.
Yep.
And you kind of move it up and down the desk, I suppose.
But, of course, making noises.
I see. So how do they justify that price?
Low production runs or something? Oh, but made from aluminium 6063T6, stainless steel and rubber.
Ooh.
Smooth ball bearings with 360 degree rotation, you'd hope, given their wheels. And it is a kilogram.
So it's quite chunky.
Yeah.
Weight-wise.
Yeah. I'm sure it's a wonderful piece of stuff, but anyway, who cares? What we really wanted to talk about is the EP-133K.0.11.
Mm, yes.
That thing.
Yeah.
The giant pocket operator, and possibly the first of a series of such.
Yes.
Well, it seems pretty cool. And it has, I don't think they're Cherry MX, but they are mechanical key switches in there, which will make it nice and clickety-clackety.
It does have that look of a 1970s calculator, doesn't it?
Yeah. The only problem is they're all breaking.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going so well. So there is a slew of how to fix your new Teenage Engineering EP-133KO, the PO-33KO. Hang on. Oh, no, it's the evolution of the PO-33. So, yes, big pocket operator. Let me quickly get the Discord open because we've got the links in there. So it is the fader that's on the bottom left that appears to be going a dodge all the time. So it's the little, do you call them the brushes that make the contacts kind of move along?
That slide up and down the fader.
Yeah, they don't have enough beans to actually press on the thing, so they just kind of stop working.
Oh dear, that's where they've cut costs then.
Seems so. I mean, I guess you could just get a bad batch of a part or choose
the wrong thing. How different is this from a pocket operator functionally?
Well, it's a little bit more capable in lots of different areas. Relatively similar in the sort of holder shift button, do a bunch of stuff, but it is actually surprisingly incredibly powerful for actually not a lot of money. It even does 32-bit flop stuff on the internals. And yes, it can record, but let me get you these speckaroonies. So it's a sampler, recorder, and sequencer. 6 stereo or 12 mono voices. 999 sample slots shared with 64 megabytes of memoir. So you have MIDI in and out recording, in and out, of course, USB, or I think it's 4 AA's of battery power, which gets you something like 30 hours, which I think is amazing. It has a color segmented display, so it's still kind of on brand for a pocket operator, though it will not fit in the pocket. Maybe in like a hunting jacket inside pocket or something. But it looks cool, and I think it's a bit more detailed and useful as a display. The ones on the pocket operators, there's maybe 2 icons that are useful. The rest is just there for no real reason. So there's a bunch of extra punch-in effects. You can, of course, re-pitch, speed up, slow down. You can slice your samples. You have 9 projects with, let's see if we can get, 99 patterns in 4 groups. You can do pattern chaining. 12 tracks for samples and MIDI, variable pattern length, automation of all 12 fader assignments. So that's the fader will control different parameters and you can automate all of those. Quantized or free time sequencing. The pads are pressure and velocity sensitive. It has kind of auto gate things for automatic or manual slicing. Interestingly, the sampling rate is 46,875 hertz, 16-bit, 6 built-in effects with a master compressor, and there is a web tool to drag and drop samples. It is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm slightly perturbed about the dodgy slider there.
Yeah, well, the OPZ was a little bit of a disaster when it first turned up. I think it's fine now. Now it's not a banana.
Yeah, they're still warped, a lot of them.
Yeah, I think as far as it goes, a fader being dodgy isn't too terrible. Yeah, so there's lots of people on the interwebs reporting the fader issue. I think it's just that fader. So the fact that there's already guides on how to DIY the replacement or open up the fader itself and bend the contacts is a little worrying. But I think that'll be a relatively simple fix for them. But the cool thing about this one is the price, because it's not just your usual horrifying Teenage Engineering price, though there are bundles with a pair of shorts, a hoodie, a tote bag, and a bunch of other stuff, which are, you know, £733. But the thing itself on its own is $299.
Yes.
I think that's quite good.
Seems very reasonable for a Teenage Engineering product.
Indeed. I watched Cuckoo's video, and the workflow seems fun and immediate. I mean, it's not my kind of thing, really, but loads of people like that quick sampling, quick beat making thing.
There's suspicions that that there might be more of these to come.
I believe it is molded into the case somewhere that it says, you know, series or something. And I think I've read that one of the designers didn't promise that they were making more, but it was kind of, oh yeah, you never know kind of comment.
Fair enough. To me, it seems like they've scaled up the pocket operator, put it into a plastic case, and they're able to charge three times more.
There is a lot more capability in terms of all that MIDI sequencing, which is super cool.
But that just might be coding.
It may well be. I think it's got to have a beefier processor to make all that happen. But there is still a lot to love about the original pocket operators.
Yeah, I got the impression they were struggling on the component level for those.
Looks like there's lots in stock.
Really? Mm. Must have been a new batch.
Including the PO33, which is the basis for the big boy, their little sampler.
Yes,
which I still kind of want.
Bought one of those at the weekend.
Yeah. Anyway, aside from that, there is a update for the Arturia Keystep Pro, the big boy. There's a new version, the Chroma, which is kind of all black and you can do multicoloured stuff and cool things. So if you were thinking of buying one, there's a better version. But what I wanted to talk about is that it's now the Eurorack Performance Mixer-a-thon again. So we had a slew of new designs cropping
up.
Yeah,
they were coming thick and fast.
Oh, well, there's two more.
Oh, gee.
And both quite cool. One of them, there is a DivKid video on, so I'd say go and watch that. But it's Nano Modules, who make the good stuff. Nothing wild about this one. Four stereo tracks, pan, send, stuff like that. But there are recording buttons on each channel because you can record automation, which is super cool. So,
within the mixer itself.
Indeed. You can record and loop the movements of aux, pan, and volume per channel, up to 12 seconds per parameter. That's a cool idea. I like that.
Yeah, I suppose you could have all sorts of strange things going off.
Yeah, although what I haven't seen, because I didn't watch the entire DivKid video, is how you might sync that to something. Because what I'm imagining is, you know, the kind of the dub thing where you just fire a bunch into a delay send and get your snare going bah, bah, bah. But that might not line up with stuff properly if it's just kind of a free running 12 second loop.
Maybe it takes a clock signal.
No.
Okay.
No. Is there an expander? There is an expander. What does it give you? Direct outs, mute control, aux CVs? No. So I don't think there's a way of clocking it.
You just let it do its stuff.
Probably great for ambient, though. So that's cool. Nano modules, great. We love it. Go watch the DivKid thing. There is also an expandable mixer from After Later Audio. I think you might have one of their mutable things, don't you?
Yeah, one of their clones.
Indeed. This one is a stereo production mixer. It's called Bartender. And the main module is, how many? 24 HP. This isn't available yet. But the main module, yeah, 24 HP, four channels. You have, this is per channel, stereo in, CV over pan, CV over level, a gain pot, a send pot with a switch for send one or send two, a switch for stereo or mono, a pre or post fader send control, which I don't think I've seen anywhere else. That's really cool. Is that on the WMD, pre or post fader sends?
Possibly. There's a lot of little switches I haven't investigated on there.
Is it in here?
It's right behind you.
Let's have a look. I want to know. It's also on the performance mixer. So I've seen it twice now. But that is a cool feature. You also have a mute control. Ooh, channel one has a button on it. I don't know what that does. So there's a nice LED fader, a mute control with a little LED. Then on channel one, there's a button below the mute, and there's also a switch at the bottom of all the channels for Q, which is neat, but the one on channel one doesn't say Q on the top. It just says off on the bottom. Odd. You then have a master fader, all your input and output jacks. Ooh, a mono feed. That's cool. A main and a Q balance control for your headphones, quarter-inch headphone out with a volume control. That's pretty cool. You then have an expander for two stereo channels, 10 HP, with all the same controls, and then a 4 HP single channel with a big pan control on the top. It does have CV over pan and level, but I thought we had that on the big one anyway. Yeah, you just don't have like the gain controls and stuff. Either way, that seems like a cool system. Not out yet, but keep your eyes peeled. The After Later Audio Bartender, Barback, and Cast Iron. Not sure about Cast Iron. Barback makes sense. Anyway, there you go. Performance mixers anywhere. Anywhere, performance mixers everywhere.
The market is positively flooded with the things.
Indeed, all flavours, though I think that might be my choice if I was in the market for one. Smaller than the Hex Mix and more fully featured than most of the others around. Ooh, speaking of mixers, you know that really expensive noise engineering one, the digital guy.
Yes.
There's a software update for that, which I'm really pleased about. Not that I own one or I'm planning to buy one. Quadraphonic and hexaphonic mixing. Either way, yeah, outputs for four or 6 speakers and panning for such a thing.
Get into the really experimental.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm very pleased for the few people that might use that, but it's great.
It was a very expensive mixer, wasn't
it? Yeah, it's like £800 or £900 or something, I think. Maybe more.
My old bugbear. Why are the non-conventional mixers so expensive?
Yeah. Yeah, it's $1,000.
I suppose it's got to be low production levels.
Possibly. And it is a big old digital boy.
But you can get a serious mixer for £1,000, a conventional mixer, either
analog
or digital.
Yeah, you can get, like an X32.
Yeah.
But the Rack one's in. Rack one is definitely less than a grand.
Yeah.
Damn.
You get a Midas digital mixer for that.
Dang. Anyway, actually, I was going to say, you can't do your surround. You can, actually, with PanLab Console. Did I tell you about PanLab Console?
No. Tell me about PanLab Console.
Why did I know? This was one of the interesting bits from Plaza when I went. It was in the summer, back when it was warm. So it's a chap, I think it's literally one guy running this company, and it is PanLab because it's designed to work nicely with QLab, the like theater sound software that I don't really know much about. But what it lets you do is use any of a supported list of mixers, which is actually already quite extensive. And as long as you've got a laptop attached running the software, you can use it to run basically any surround sound system. And you kind of place the speakers yourself in the software and it does all the panning for you. He wanted to create a way of making that more accessible without having to spring for the incredibly expensive proprietary systems like Lisa or Elisa, don't know, the L-Acoustics one. And what's the other one that I tried? It was an object-based thingy. D&B Soundscape, that's the other one. I didn't forget it at all, didn't have to Google it. I know these things.
Okay.
Anyway, proprietary and expensive. So PanLab Console seeks to make this thing better. But the guy's lovely. It's a cool demo. Where was I going with this?
Quadraphonic and hexaphonic.
Quadraphonic's cool, damn it. Anyway, we were going to talk about lifters and stuff, weren't we?
Yes.
Why? I've forgotten.
Well, we've always had this, I've always had this thing that after purchasing a cloud lifter,
yeah,
and then subsequently purchasing a Clark Technique lifter and opening both of them and then realising that internally they were very similar,
yeah,
but price-wise they were worlds apart. And it started making me wonder why things like cloud lifters are so expensive.
Yeah. And then you were saying you should have got the FET head, which is the one I'm running.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I could have got 2 FET heads for the cost of a cloud lifter.
Indeed.
So my summation of the situation is that cloud lifters' notoriety is purely down to serious marketing.
And everybody, they've just got it on the tip of their tongue. Oh, yeah, you need a lifter. A cloud lifter. But there is a fourth option.
And it is?
Actually, there's also another one, the SE Electronics Dynamite looking thing.
Yeah.
That's quite funny. But if you wanted to spend £300...
Which I don't.
Anyway.
If I did.
There is the Soyuz Launcher.
Okay, what does that do for me?
Not only will it boost your levels to a degree of 26 decibels. I can't remember how many the others have. I think it's like 32 on the FET head. Anyway, it'll give you 26 decibels of boost, but there's more. This is no ordinary ivory box. Imagine a little box that could bring that old-school magic sound to recordings made with a common dynamic mic and an ordinary interface. Impossible? Not anymore. Introducing the Soyuz Launcher for £200... Oh, I misspoke. £229.
I see.
Still pricey. How much is the cloud lifter?
I'm going to say about £160, £170. Pounds.
So it is more. So yes, this is a boost and colour box.
Don't you want your boosters to be transparent?
I would have thought so.
And then you can colour later on using other
means. Non-destructively.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's there. I do really like the look of Soyuz mics, though. Ooh, there's a Launcher Deluxe. I think that must be a stereo one.
And how much is that thing?
£600.
How much?
£600. It does have multiple modes.
Wow.
Anyway, but there's options. But yeah, check out how awesome and vibey these mics look.
But of course...
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's like £2,000 or something.
But of course, we have the Shure SM7DB now with its own built-in lifter.
Indeed. And of course, that horrible low-quality XLR audio interface if you want it.
Yes.
Delicious. I think it's time to miscellaneously recommend some media.
Okay.
I'm ready to go. And I know you are as well.
Yes.
I am going to venture perilously close to the point of no return on the Rack Addicts After Hours playlist. That is tinyurl.com/rackaddicts. If you are a Spotify user, that is our playlist of tunes that I've been adding to, the ones that we've been recommending, I am going to add the new North Lane tune called Dante. And it goes off. It's big. It is metal. There is distortion in the vocals, but it's... We're walking that line, but I think it's really good. But it's got this kind of slightly filter-pingy, feedback-y pulse sound along with the drums in the intro, which really reminded me of some Dan Mayo stuff. Have I told you about Dan Mayo before?
I don't recall you telling me about Dan Mayo.
It is possible it was a miscellaneous multimedia recommendation at one point, but he is a drummer on the Tube of the U, and he did a really cool series, which I think is an EP, so I won't play it. I will play it to you, Pete, but we shouldn't put it in the thing, called Woodhouse. So he does unorthodox drummy things in a really nice, it looks like a wood chop. It sounds awesome, big space. But he's got a dude with a mixer and some guitar pedals, so he's processing some of the mics through delays and phases and stuff and performing with the drummy stuff. And it reminded me of that. It's really cool. So you should check out Dan Mayo Woodhouse 1 and, of course, the Rack Addicts After Hours Spotify playlist. Pete, take us away. What have you got for us this episode?
On a previous episode, when I was doing a multimedia recommendation, I would have recommended Hoovy's Garage.
No bells.
Yeah, it was some time ago.
The anyway, deep and distant past.
Tyler Hoover, or Tyler Hoovy, I don't know how he pronounces his second name exactly, did a kind of car type of YouTube channel where he buys what he calls hoopties.
Hoopties.
Which are sort of cars of various eras that might have, you know, a few problems. But he's bought all sorts of things from really sort of a couple of $1,000s all the way up to Rolls Royces and Ferraris and all that type of stuff. And he has amassed quite a phenomenal car collection, primarily through the, you know, the monetization of YouTube. Series that he's also done, which is sponsored with a couple of other YouTubers that I've also recommended, called Car Trek. It's very much in the mold of...
I think I do remember that one.
Yeah, very much in the mold of Top Gear and that type of thing. Anyway, he's branched out with his new girlfriend. Anyway, he started this new kind of news program, I suppose you want to call it, called Good Morning YouTube. Still quite a lot of car content, but they look at all sorts of other bits and pieces. And it's a different sort of format. It's more like a kind of... It's presented somewhat like a news program. So both presenters sitting down, looking at a laptop, talking to camera, etc., etc. So if you're into Tyler Hoovy and his sort of semi-comedic style of presentation and his personality, this will be right up your street. So that's my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Good Morning YouTube.
Great stuff. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We are edging perilously closer to the big 200. Come back next week for the thing that I'm definitely going to remember to do, which was, yes, example audio to run through that Adobe doodad. I think that'd be really interesting. Let's do it. We'll see you then. Farewell!